Welcome, viewers and listeners, to another exciting broadcast with a very exciting guest we have this week, Tamara Litch. Tamara, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And I'm going to give a little short introduction for those who don't know, and I think most of our listeners do know, that Tamara Litch is a passionate and effective organizer of the Truckers Freedom Convoy in 2022. She's also a loving mother and grandmother, a proud Métis and a proud Albertan, a defiant political prisoner who was jailed for 49 days, I believe, for daring to criticize the government. And her new book, Hold the Line, My Story from the Heart of the Freedom Convoy, is the inside scoop of what really happened during those fateful days. So, Tamara, we're so grateful to have you on the program today, and you can enlighten us about the things we don't know.
Absolutely. Yes, yeah. I'm really happy to be here. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Well, you got kind of sucked in, I guess, in a good way to organizing this project or helping to organize it and being one of the key people, and some people call the organizer of the Truckers Freedom Convoy. And I've read in your book how that happened, but maybe you could, in a few short words, tell our people how that came to be for you.
Yes, well, I'll give you the short version. I'd been following politics fairly loosely, I would say, for a few years, and really started paying attention, you know, early 2000s, I would say, right around the time of the sponsorship scandal. And then, so I followed it very closely. I was shocked at what I saw when I started paying attention to question period, the behavior that I saw coming out of our leaders in the House of Commons. And then, of course, after Trudeau was elected shortly, a few years after, they started coming after the energy industry here in Alberta, which, as you know, is our number one resort industry here. And I worked in that industry, so I started to become a bit of an advocate for that, and standing up for. I mean, in Canada and Alberta, we have one of the most environmentally friendly and efficient ways of extracting our resources in all of the planet, and I just couldn't understand why we were being so vilified and demonized, you know, and yet we're bringing in resources from countries that have terrible human rights violations in some cases. And so I didn't really understand that. And I saw families suffer as a result of that legislation. And then, of course, the pandemic hit. And then I followed that very closely. And a lot of things like that happened there did not make sense to me. And so when I had the opportunity to contact Chris Barber, you know, I reached out to him one day, and he said he'd been in contact with a lady from the East and a few other people, and they were all discussing different ideas that they could do to stand up against the trucker mandate. Specifically, was the catalyst for the Freedom Convoy, and I just said, look, these are my skill sets. I want to help you. I'll get you a social media set up. I'll get you, you know, you're going to need some money. We'll get a crowdfunding going for you. I'm at your service, whatever you need. I want to help. And then it just really literally took off from there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's quite exciting reading your book, how it went from one page to the next. It's sort of like how quickly things took off. I think it was only early in January that this idea was being circulated. And by the end of January, you were in Ottawa and $24 million had been raised, which you didn't have access to most of it. Most of it was either pulled back or sequestered, so you couldn't have access to it. But all that happened in just a few short weeks. And yeah, it's amazing. Yeah.
And it was incredible even being there on the ground in Ottawa. Well, even before we left, it was Keith Wilson mentioned it to me one day. It was like 1 hour in Ottawa felt like a week. Like it was just so busy and so full. You know what I mean? It was that 3 weeks there felt like much, much longer. Well, of course, I was there for a little longer than some of them anyway.
Yeah, involuntarily.
Yes.
Yeah, you sort of were hoping that the mandates would be rolled back by that time, and truckers would be crossing freely over the U.S. border as they should be, as God intended. But yeah, you ended up in a prison cell. And was it 49 days? Is that the right number?
In total, yeah. I was in for 48, or sorry, 18 days in the winter. And then last summer, I was arrested on a breach, and I was in for 30 days last summer.
Yeah, and that breach was simply you attended a dinner at which one of the other organizers was in attendance. And even in spite of the fact that it was in a crowd situation, there were lawyers there. They considered it a breach that you had had contact with one of the other organizers.
And they were honestly just waiting. They were just looking for a reason. I mean, the Crown Prosecutor, about a month before that dinner, I say a month, yeah, not even a month before that dinner, actually wanted me rearrested and sent back to jail just for agreeing to accept that award.
Wow. Wow. Unbelievable. I mean, so much about this is unbelievable. I think the lockdowns and the mask mandates, the vaccine mandates, all that stuff just hit Canada, took us unawares, really, in many ways. A lot of people were taken so unawares that they went along with it and thought there was nothing wrong. But those of us who were able to perceive the overreach of government were shocked that these totalitarian measures could be enacted in a country like Canada.
Yeah, well, and, you know, they went after kids skating on outdoor rinks and pastors.
Yeah.
Pastors, like trying to hold their church services. I mean, I'm sure for you too. I mean, that was really an eye-opening. Not that a lot of things hadn't already happened before then, but Canada is not a country that arrests pastors for trying to hold their services or, you know, speaking about their beliefs. That is stuff that I grew up watching happen in other countries.
Right. And jumping near to the end of your book, I'm close to the end. As I mentioned earlier, I just was trying to get right to the end before this call. But there, you mentioned that the prosecutor in Ottawa, right after you were arrested, and the judge were both Liberal Party supporters. The judge had actually been a Liberal Party candidate in 2011, and the prosecutor was a major donor to the Liberal Party. And, you know, the fact that they were able to work their wiles on you in a court system just seems so wrong.
Yeah, and not only was he a big donor, but I mean, he was such a big donor that he got invited to their special dinners for their biggest donors.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the things also that was key, I think, was the social media, the use of social media. I know we were the beneficiaries of that out here in British Columbia and across the country. And there was so much going on. And of course, social media has itself grown legs since the pandemic and the lockdowns and, you know, ban on, you know, personal contact and so on. But the amount of information available to those who were looking for it, people like us who wanted to know what was really going on and didn't just take the prime minister's word for it, was quite amazing. How involved were you in the social media aspect of that campaign?
I was, well, as far as the Freedom Convoy ones, I set up the social media accounts. And then right very soon after that, we were just so inundated with messages that I had to form a committee, because we were getting messages of people that wanted to donate stuff or organize a stop where they could, you know, bring food, bring deaf fluid for the truckers or washer fluid. People that were telling their stories, you know, and that's, during the pandemic itself, I heard so many heartbreaking, crushing stories. But when we started the social media campaign, the stories that came in from everyday Canadians on how this has impacted and affected their lives. I joke about the fact that I was never a big crier. I mean, that doesn't mean I don't have a heart, but I was just never a big crier. And then right at the beginning of this, I've probably cried every day since, you know, there's just so many terrible stories, but that said, they also show the resilience of Canadians. Yes, they're heartbreaking, but they show that the strength and the resilience that makes us, you know, the great people that we are.
Yeah, I love to read your accounting of as you drove across the country and seeing all the people on the overpasses and alongside of the road and the, you know, people who had prepared food for you. It's just amazing. Did that kind of surprise you as you went? Were there new waves of revelation about the depth of feeling that Canadians were having about this loss of freedom?
Absolutely. And, you know, I remember Chris Barber said to me one day before we got into Manitoba, when we were on our way, we kind of thought that maybe, you know, this was maybe a Western Canada thing. Maybe we'd have more support out here. And we were expecting, I think, that the farther east we got, that these crowds would start dwindling away. But that is exactly not what happened. I mean, you read about what happened when we went through Manitoba. I mean, that was a divine experience. That's the only way that I can describe it. Going through there and seeing those crowds, and it just continued all the way to Ottawa. And then when we got to Ottawa and saw the crowd up on Parliament Hill, that first day there had to have been tens of thousands of people there, and Quebec flags and Canada flags and provincial flags. You know, it was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a privilege. There were a couple of ladies that went down from northern BC here who kept us up to date with a lot of photos, videos, and commentary, you know, just on a daily basis. It was so exciting. And I'm sure that there are many like me who say, oh, gee, I should have gone.
Yeah, I know. It was so
We were busy
great.
Here, and we were supportive from a distance. But we really appreciate
yes.
all of those who took the time to go and were able to do that. One of the things you got, I mean, they began attacking you, the media, and of course, Trudeau with some of his unkind words about the convoy in general. But you even were attacked about your Métis descendant, your Métis ancestry.
Yes.
What did that feel like to have someone questioning your ancestral roots?
Well, I actually found it kind of funny because, well, ironic, I guess, because if we would have been traveling to Ottawa for Black Lives Matter or shut down the oil and gas industry, and I would have claimed to be of Métis heritage, they'd be parading us around the whole country right now, giving us medals and having big, you know, events. But because it wasn't for something that they believed, I didn't believe, didn't follow their ideology, they questioned my heritage.
Yeah.
They would never do that if I was advocating for something that they wanted. They'd be shouting it from the rooftops.
Right. Yeah.
And so it was so funny because APTN had reached out to my lawyer to ask for verification on my heritage. And the lady that they tapped, they interviewed her, who knew nothing about me, goes on the air on APTN to say she doesn't know anything about me. Well, I mean, duh.
Yeah, I bet there's people that don't know that much about me, about my ancestry or whatever. Like, it's not like we go around, you know, talking about that every day. So you had contact with other Native leaders,
Indigenous
leaders who were very supportive. And you said along the route, there were even drumming ceremonies, those who had come out to support the Freedom Convoy with traditional ceremonial attire and so on.
And yes, yeah. It was beautiful. I remember the first time I was introduced over the phone to Nolene Villebrun, and she's one of the clan mothers that came down from the Northwest Territories. And of course, throughout the organization of this, I had many moments where I just felt almost speechless. And that was one of them, because after my conversation with her, and this is only a day or two into organizing our trip, it hit me that, you know, this was such a great opportunity to actual reconciliation. And this isn't out in the mainstream media, but One of the most profound things that Nolene said was in her witness statement for the inquiry last fall, was that the Freedom Convoy, from her perspective as a 60-some-year-old Native elder, a former Dene chief, was that the convoy was the closest thing to an actual reconciliation she has witnessed in her lifetime.
Oh, that's really
that is a massive statement.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you
And
come
nobody's
at a
talking about it.
Yeah, how many different ethnic backgrounds were represented, you know, Sikh truckers and supporters, Hutterites, and of course First Nations. So the fact that Trudeau would have the gall to call this, you know, a racist or a narrow, bigoted, you know, right wing, you know, fundamental right wing organization, that instead of recognizing that it was a beautiful opportunity, and he would have had a beautiful opportunity to have mingled with a lot of real Canadians
And
across.
that's one of the travesties about the whole thing. I mean, even with the mainstream media, I mean, they had a real opportunity to bring Canada together and really show the unity and promote that unity. And instead, they chose division and hatred and lies. And I mean, I think that's one of the things that we inadvertently exposed for sure was the mainstream media. And, you know, the evidence that came out at the inquiry showed that the government was colluding with the media before I even shook Chris Barber's hand. They were already trying to paint a narrative and planning to paint the narrative that we were January 6th style insurrectionists on our way to Ottawa to rape and pillage. I mean, we were blue collar Canadians who had said enough is enough. All the other countries are opening up. At that point, they were talking about stopping interprovincial travel, which I'm sorry, that's my charter right too. And I have children and family in other provinces. And so that wasn't going to work for me.
Right. Yeah. You brought out that, and this was something I hadn't thought of until I read it in your book, that Prime Minister Trudeau really had interest in exercising the Emergencies Act long before that took place, like at the very beginning of the pandemic and before any of the mandates were in place. He talked about possibly having to use the Emergencies Act, and that kind of shocked me. That so it almost looked like at the end, at the very last, you were making plans and cooperating with the city of Ottawa in terms of moving some of the trucks into different areas. And it's like he couldn't stand it to see this thing peacefully resolved. And so he had to put on the Emergencies Act to, you know, so that he could send the, you know, military style assault officers to drive you from the hill, right? As if he was saving Canada. And that was the opposite was true.
That was abhorrent. That was absolutely abhorrent and unnecessary. And against the advice that he was getting from law enforcement, you know, and the intelligence community. One of the Superintendent Pat Morris from the Ontario Provincial Police, who, by the way, are a fantastic organization, really happy. We loved working with them. In his testimony at the POEC, and now he's the head of intelligence, said the lack of violence in Ottawa during the convoy was shocking.
Wow.
He also said what he was hearing coming from the media and from the politicians did not match the intelligence that they were getting. And this is not getting out. The mainstream media is not reporting on this. Brenda Luckey, the former RCMP commissioner, was advising against it. She said, you haven't used all your tools yet. And so he just had an itchy trigger finger right from early 2020. And he used that as an opportunity to crack down on peaceful Canadians that were just there to say, please give us our lives back. Like people, I have so many friends, Rod, that weren't able to go say goodbye to their dying parents.
That's just a tragedy. It's more than a tragedy. That's
it's inhumane.
Humanity.
It's inhumane.
Yeah, exactly. And other things that were inhumane. When you were arrested at right after the Emergencies Act was invoked, you actually went to turn yourself in, and at first they wouldn't arrest you. Said, "No, we're not looking for you." And shortly afterwards, they hauled you away. But you spent a night on a cement bunk with no blanket. You were cold and wet when you went in there, and the police in that location said they did not have a blanket. What is wrong with this country?
And it wasn't even a bed rod. What it is a big cement slab. It was a solid cement slab. And obviously, you know what happens if you lay on cement, it sucks all your body heat out of you, right? So we
Exactly.
had been walking around that day and it had been kind of misting and wet. And then that evening it had been snowing, like really heavy wet flakes. And so by the time I was arrested, I was quite damp. It was cold. And yeah, so I spent that night, a night or two. I only can't even remember now, but yeah, on that this horribly uncomfortable cement slab, just trying to get some sleep, trying to stay warm. It was yeah, dogs get treated better.
Yeah, that would be in, when people attacking, for instance, the United States on how they treat war criminals, they would consider that abuse. They would consider that torture to deprive you of even a blanket to sleep with. And you said they wouldn't give you a book. You couldn't get a Bible. You couldn't get anything like that for a couple of days. And then, of
Yeah,
course,
it
they
was a
take you from one
few.
place to another in shackles. You actually don't look that dangerous to me. That is a
I'm
matter of
not.
humiliation. That's just to humiliate you and kind of parade you around. This they've captured their trophy and whatever. Where's the decency and the common sense in the justice system?
Well, that's exactly it. But you know what? That doesn't reflect on me. That reflects on them. That's what I think. I kind of wear, you know, as silly as it sounds, maybe everything that they've done to me, I sort of wear as a badge of honor because it shows me how terrified they are of just a grandma from Alberta that, you know, that speaks her mind and doesn't put up with shenanigans. And so that tells me that they're afraid of all of us, you know, that are going to stand up and say something. And they think that they're making an example of me, but they're really not. They're showing their true colors. You've probably heard the case of that lady, that mother of two in Toronto, that was just shot a couple days ago by a gentleman that was out on bail. He has a horrible history of violence and stabbings and stuff like that. And he's been granted bail two times faster than I got bail once.
Wow. And you weren't running around shooting and stabbing people. You were encouraging all the participants to maintain a peaceful respect for the rule of
That's
law.
right.
And I could read it in your story here that you were trying hard to keep unity within the ranks, which wasn't always easy.
That's
Apparently,
right.
when you get that many people together and they're all passionate and they're all independent and they're not, necessarily subscribed to a particular set of beliefs or whatever,
Lots
it's
of personalities, lots of personalities, yes.
challenging, but you and the rest succeeded in keeping it peaceful. And that's just an amazing testimony to what was going on there. It was actually, I'm going to call it an act of God or a divine event that you were able
It
to
was.
maintain that respect for law and the fellowship and the fun that folks had together there, even while they were dealing with something very serious.
Yes.
I noticed even at the time before you were arrested and following that, you speak of love and forgiveness, and you were urging, even as things were coming unglued there, you were urging your fellow convoy members to respect the police, to show love and forgive them. They know not what
Yes.
they do, which of course is a
Yeah.
biblical reference.
Yes.
And I want to thank you for that personally, for
Oh, thank you.
demonstrating that commitment to principles, even when things were not going in a way that you could in any way be happy about. But
Yes,
that's
so thank you.
tremendous example, and I think those who followed this from across the country recognize that you were there on a mission for the future benefit of Canadians, and not for your own thing, and not to disrupt or humiliate anyone. You were there to try to get some common sense going. And it's really a shame that the Prime
Yes.
Minister didn't take the opportunity to come out, meet you, talk with Brian Peckford, meet with Chris Barber, meet with some of the doctors. I mean, there was such a tremendous opportunity that could have ended so differently than it did.
I agree. And, it's really unfortunate, like I said earlier about the mainstream media, that was a real missed opportunity. And, in my opinion, and I said this to Chris on the way out there, fundamentally speaking, I believe, this is just my opinion, the leader has two jobs: protect the rights and freedoms of your people and unite your people, because we're stronger together. And I said to Chris, right now we're doing his job. And this is still when we were on our way there.
Yeah.
And for him to have such disdain for his own citizens, we were not a fringe minority. We are the majority. We're just not as vocal as the minority.
Yeah.
And so, if you're going to lead a country, you have to lead all of your people. You do not get to pick and choose. That's not how this works, unless you're a dictator.
Well, that's exactly right. So, Tamara, I know you have some time constraints here. I don't want to keep you too long, but you recently were in Ontario. I wanted
Yes.
to have you talk about your book tour. Again, I'm going to mention for our listeners and viewers, Hold the Line is Tamara Litch's great book. It's available from Amazon, and everyone should read it. That's a historical marker, that book, that every person should have. So tell us about your tour, your events coming up, where people might be able to see you, and also how they can help get involved with your court costs. You are facing some charges. I don't know if you want to talk about, if you have time to talk about that at all, or.
Yeah, well, I just got back from Ontario. I spent some time out there doing some fundraising with one of the truckers that's also facing charges, Harold Yonker. Beautiful man, beautiful family. We had such an amazing time. And
you had a privilege of being with him at,
I
because
did.
I had supper in
Totally.
their home not too long ago, and just a wonderful home. And we
Yes.
value that family. And Harold is just a gem of a guy. It's great that you were able to spend some time with him.
Yes, yeah, it really was. We had a great time. And so we were doing some fundraising for our legal fees, each of our legal fees. And we're starting the book tour. Well, it's kind of started already, but I'm going back out to Ontario towards the end of the month, and we're going to be doing some events at Aylmer. We're looking at some dates in Toronto. So I'm going to do a tour there. Then I'll be going to the West Coast and doing a bunch of events in British Columbia. And then basically coming back and getting ready for trial. We'll be heading out to trial right around the middle of August to start
Wow.
getting ready for it.
Wow. So you have a good lawyer?
I think so. Yeah. I think he's a good lawyer. Yes. We have a great team. And I think Chris is going to have has an amazing team too. So I'm really looking forward to getting out there and getting this going. And, we just have so much evidence that we can present, and let's go time.
Yeah, wonderful. Where can people keep track of your itinerary and find out how they can, if they're in an area where you're going to be speaking, how they can check that out?
Yes, Rebel News has set up a, or not, sorry, Rebel News, Democracy Fund has a website for me. That's who's funding my criminal case. So if you want to donate to my legal case, you can donate directly to the Democracy Fund. They are a registered charity, so you will get a tax receipt if you donate there. And I think it's helptamara.com is the website. I better double check that. I should have double checked that first, but
Okay, I'm all done.
helptamara.com. And I think they'll have like all the events posted there and everything too, as well as, you know, if you want to donate or how you can donate, that type of stuff.
Well, Tamara Litch, it's been a real honor to speak with you today. God bless you as you go forward. We really appreciate what you've done for our country and for all of us living in it, for our children and grandchildren. We think that you have made a difference, and you are making a difference. We will be praying for your court case, and we just wish you all the best on the trail ahead.
Thank you very much. And thank you so much for having me and for your time today.
Well, we appreciate it. It's a great honor for us. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.